WMFO, Medford. Unlike milk, long-distance telephone calls, and library books, there is no due date, tolls, or expiration in the grand hour. Good morning. It's the 31st of July, 2019. Last week, I started the Duke Red Matter from the series Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey as Johnny Dollar. I'm going to continue. I'll continue with that. It's serialized, 15-minute dailies, running through the last week of January 1956. This is episode 313. Yours Truly, Johnny Dollar, The Duke Red Matter, with an original air date of the 25th of January, 1956. You're listening to Arthur here on the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org. Again, I'm going to bookend this episode of Johnny Dollar with the next in the series, episode 314. But between that, we'll have a Western. Stay tuned for that. Thanks.
From Hollywood, it's time now for
Johnny Dollar.
Who?
Johnny Dollar, the insurance investigator. This is Miss Abbott, isn't it?
Yes. What are you doing in the stable office?
Waiting for you to call me. Your father threw me off the farm a few minutes ago. A man named Cully, who works for your dad, said he really didn't mean it. Said he'd fix it up for me to talk to you.
Cully? I guess that's why he asked me to phone the stable office.
You told me the horse wasn't injured, shouldn't have been destroyed.
Oh, I hope you didn't believe all that, Mr. Dollar.
Well, now look, I've got to settle a $65,000 claim on the death of a racehorse. The carcass was cremated, and I have no evidence that the horse was destroyed or even injured. I don't know what to believe yet, but I can tell you this. Don't ever talk to an insurance investigator the way you did earlier today, not unless you can back it up.
My, you sound grim.
You sound like it's a laughing matter.
Hardly anything's a laughing matter. I'll be right down.
Tonight, and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar, location San Pietro, California, to the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Universal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Duke Red matter. 15 minutes after I spoke with Terry Abbott on the phone, I looked out the window of the stable office and saw her starting down toward the stables. She'd changed clothes. This time, she was wearing blue jeans and riding boots. She carried a quirt in one hand, a cigarette in the other. There was a scarf or some such tied around her hair. All in all, it was a classic impression. Rich girl, racing horses, and fast cars. She wore a disdainful pout, also classic.
Hi.
How do?
Father asked me where I was going, and I told him I was going for a ride. Why'd he throw you out?
He didn't like questions I asked him, I guess. I don't know.
Maybe I won't like the questions you asked me.
Possibly. Probably.
You don't really work very hard trying to please anyone, do you?
Industrial hazard in my business. Hope it doesn't bother you too much, Miss Abbott.
Nope, I like it. You're so darn sure of yourself, and you know so darn little, and you look like you might be thinking all kinds of things. How tall are you? No, let me guess. 6'1"?
Not quite.
Well, You're tall enough, I suppose. Do you like this office? I suppose you've been opening the files and going through all of Father's papers. That's what you're supposed to do, isn't it?
Nope.
Well, unless you know something about horses, the papers around here wouldn't mean much to you. Times, weights, whole schedule and chart for every bit of stock on the place. Do you know anything about horses?
Just one. Duke Red.
Oh.
He was insured for $65,000, and he's dead now.
You know, I didn't think I'd ever see you again.
I wanted to talk to you before I left.
What about? I didn't insure Duke Red. My father insured him. Your business is with my dad, not me, Mr. Dollar.
Pardon me if I seem a little confused, but earlier today you were very anxious to tell me something about all that.
Was I?
Yes, you were. Hey, what is this anyway?
I wish we hadn't met.
But we did, and you mentioned there was no need to destroy Duke Red after he'd been injured. Now, did you say something like that to me because you were angry at your father? Or did you say it because there was some truth to it? Well, now, what's that supposed to mean? Do you just stand around and pout when people ask you questions? Did you mean that horse wasn't injured or that he was injured but that he could have been saved? Well, did you have any reason at all for saying the things you did?
I've been very upset lately. All of us around here have been very upset.
Yeah, I'm getting that way myself.
Duke Red was the best horse we've had around these stables in 5 years. His father was a real champion, Earl Red. Maybe you've heard of him. He earned $190,000. We've all been counting on Duke Red since he was a colt. He had it then. This was going to be his big year. When this stupid accident happened, it just turned all of us upside down.
Uh-huh. Is that your explanation for the things you said to me?
Yes, for the moment. Now, please, don't ask me any more questions right now.
One more.
What?
Your father fired a couple of people I wanted to talk with. One of them was a Howard Monroe.
Dad's office manager.
Yes, I met him a couple of nights ago. He wouldn't talk. He was too mad. Said something about letting your father handle his own dirty business.
What?
Now, I don't know what that meant, and I don't think I care just now. But the other man who was fired was a horse trainer named Warner, Tom Warner. According to your father, it was Warner's neglect that caused the horse to stumble and back into the tractor blades.
What?
Warner isn't around here now, but he must be somewhere, and I want to talk to him. Now, where can I find out his address?
He's from Baltimore, Maryland.
Baltimore. What about his address?
Well, it'd be in the personnel files. You can get those at the office in town in San Pietro.
Okay. Do you think he went there?
I don't know. I don't know. And what's more, I don't care.
The Abbotts, father and daughter, were turning out to be a real peachy pair to deal with. I left them in their racing farm and drove back into San Pietro in the offices where I obtained the Baltimore address on Thomas Warner. Expense account item 4, $1.05, one telegram. To Hartford in the office of Niles Pearson, requesting a complete record of Benjamin Abbott's financial status. Item 5, $1.60, another telegram. To Thomas Warner, horse trainer, requesting him to contact me as soon as possible at the San Pietro Hotel. Meanwhile, I did what I could to establish Abbott's local credit standing. I started with a bank.
Dollar?
That's right.
What's it about?
I'm an insurance investigator. I'm working for Universal Adjustment Bureau. We have a claim in on a property of Benjamin Abbott.
Duke Red?
That's right. $65,000.
Wow.
Yeah.
That's quite a loan. What can the bank do for you?
Tell me about Abbott's credit situation, for one thing.
Oh.
He does bank here, I presume.
Yeah, for years. My name's Dale Ryan. We better go in my office.
Sure.
Grab a chair, Dollar.
Thanks.
Miss White?
Yes, Mr. O'Ryan.
Bring in Mr. Abbott's file, please. Up to date.
Yes, sir.
It'll take a few minutes, Dollar.
All right. Maybe you can give me a rundown on how things are generally.
Maybe. This is all confidential, I suppose.
Absolutely, Mr. O'Ryan. I have no axe to grind.
You must have something to grind or you wouldn't be here. People usually try to cheat insurance companies for money reasons, don't they?
Well, usually, yes.
Have you been cheated?
I don't know. I don't know if there's any reason for us to be cheated. Look, maybe it'll put your mind at ease if I just tell you that a man with a $65 claim has his financial situation checked, as a matter of course.
You're a careful bunch of cut-ups, aren't you?
Well, business being the way it is, yeah.
Well, I don't think you'll find too much to raise an eyebrow about with old Ben. He's got one of the largest balances in town. Roughly, it'd be in the $100,000 area. Yeah, racing horses is quite a business, and he knows what he's doing. I doubt very much if he'd try to bamboozle you people out of a tiny little $65,000.
Well,
that's small change to Ben Abbott. That ranch, the stock, his investment there must come to well over $1 million. He meets a weekly payroll in the $10,000 class. Terry must run him a couple of thousand a month or so.
You mean his daughter?
Yeah. You met her?
Yeah.
Well, when Terry wants a new car, she just parks the old one she's been driving and takes a plane to San Francisco and buys a new one. She might even feel like having a vacation and fly over to Honolulu. She's very expensive that way.
If what you say is true, she must be.
No doubt about it. Well, she'll probably be marrying somebody one of these days as soon as she can find a guy who can stand the freight charges. I figure it'll be one of that Los Angeles oil gang or somebody from Texas. Oil's her best bet, don't you think? Well, that is, if she wants to stay in her social circle. It isn't very wide, naturally.
Naturally.
Oh, yes?
Mr. O'Ryan.
Oh, come in, come in.
Mr. Abbott's folder.
Oh, thanks. Well, here it is. See for yourself.
Yeah.
There's a lot to it. You want to take that office over there and look this over, Mr. Dollar?
Mr. Dollar? Yeah, I think I'd better. I spent the rest of the afternoon going over Benjamin Abbott's local bank standing. It confirmed in detail what Mr. O'Ryan had said in general. His assets were many, his cash on hand plentiful. Also, and this has a bearing, the activities of his daughter Terry were indicated in some of the expenditures. There was only one item I had to question O'Ryan about when I'd finished looking it all over.
Yes, Dollar?
I noticed a check was drawn 5 days ago payable to Howard T. Monroe, $5,500.
Yes?
It's marked bonus.
Monroe handled business affairs for Abbott a year or two, and Monroe left a few days ago. Probably severance and things like that.
Yeah.
Anything wrong?
I don't know. For all I can gather, they didn't part company under the best of terms. As a matter of fact, they had kind of a row. Seems strange he'd pay Monroe a balance after he kicked him out.
He's a strange guy. Check cleared all right. No question on it.
Oh, yeah, I noticed. Something else, then.
Hmm?
Monroe was fired last Tuesday. Monday, a man named Thomas Warner was fired, too.
Tom Warner? The trainer?
Yeah. Abbott told me Warner was responsible for the accident with Duke Red. Funny.
What?
Well, according to these books, Abbott should still owe Thomas Warner a month's salary, $700.
Well, let me see. Yes.
No bonus, no salary, no severance.
Seems to me Tom Warner's got a kick coming.
Why doesn't he kick, Mr. O'Ryan?
I don't know. I would.
Most anybody would. I rechecked Abbott's local office in San Pietro and learned that Warner had not left any kind of forwarding address. As a matter of fact, he told no one he was leaving. Expense account item 6, $1.98, dinner, alone, in the dining room adjacent to the lobby of the San Pietro Hotel. I wasn't enjoying my chef's special with a limp green salad when the clerk came in.
Mr. Dollar.
Hmm?
I thought you might be in here. A long-distance call for you, Baltimore, Maryland.
Oh, yeah, fine. Where can I take you?
Use the lobby phone, Mr. Dollar. I'll plug you in from the switchboard. Yeah, go ahead. They're on the line now.
Good, thanks. Thanks very much. Hello? Hello?
Hello. Is this Johnny Dollar, the man who sent the telegram?
Yes, who's this?
This is Thomas Warner's father. The wire I opened it, it said it was important for Thomas to get in touch with you. I thought I'd better call and tell you where you could reach him, Mr. Dollar.
Well, that's very kind of you, sir.
I come home from work. I think this is best. You call him in San Pietro. He worked near there for a man named Benjamin Abbott. Ben Abbott, training horses. You get in touch with Thomas.
Oh, wait a minute. I'm in San Pietro now, Mr. Warner. Your son left here 4 days ago. Didn't he come home?
No. Are you sure Thomas is not at Mr. Benjamin Abbott's farm?
Positive. Do you have any other ideas where he could be?
No. Not sound like Thomas, though, Mr. Dollar. He would not go off away without letting his mother and me know.
Are you sure?
I am sure, certain. Thomas, my son, he always let my wife and I know where he is, so we don't worry. Something is wrong, Mr. Dollar?
What?
Is something wrong?
Yeah. Maybe there is. Yeah. Plenty.
Now, here's our star to tell you about tomorrow's intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow? Well, sometimes a dead man can answer a lot of questions. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Thank you, lads. Yes. We won't be joining tomorrow. We'll be joining later in the program for another episode of the Duke Red Matter. Up next, I'm going to play another Norman McDonald show. He's more notable for Gunsmoke, but this one's Fort Laramie. I've played this one before on the show, but since I've moved the time slot, I'm going to go ahead and replay it because it is a very humorous, lighthearted Fort Laramie. It started relatively obscure Raymond Burr, who would go on the following year to become Perry Mason on television. Fort Laramie only had one season. That was in 1956. Again, it was also created by Norman McDonald, who created Gunsmoke, which was known for its soundscape and attention to detail. Norman McDonald brought the sound effects team over with this one, Bill James, Ray Kemper, and Tom Hanley. They were the same sound crew that did Gunsmoke. They brought him over for Fort Laramie. Again, Fort Laramie didn't survive as long as Gunsmoke did. Also, the head writer was John Meston, so it's pretty much the same team. Again, this is Fort Laramie. This episode is titled Still Waters, with an original air date of the 14th of October, 1956. About this time in 1956, Elvis was becoming an international success. Again, I mentioned that last week because all these episodes I'm playing are from 1956, the year Elvis broke, with Elvis Presley and his follow-up album, Elvis. But they don't have Paralyzed here on the library. So without further ado, I'll go ahead and play episode 38 of Fort Laramie, Still Waters. Listening to Arthur here on the Grand Hour, 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio.
Raymond Burr as Captain Lee Quince. Specially transcribed tales of the dark and tragic ground of the wild frontier. The saga of fighting men who rode the rim of empire. And the dramatic story of Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry.
Captain?
Oh, Mr. Syberts. The men looked fine, I thought.
Well, yes, sir, they looked all right.
Good drill. Good parade.
Yes, sir, but actually I was more concerned with... Well, weren't you listening, sir?
I was watching, Lieutenant. I almost never listen to a dress parade.
No, I mean the band.
The band seemed to march real good.
Captain, the music. Frankly, I thought it was terrible.
Oh?
Usually it just sounds bad. But today it was awful. What, didn't it sound strange to you? Tinny, off key?
I was watching B Company, Mr. Syberts. Marched just fine.
I don't know. Maybe it's my ears.
More likely my ears. I don't pay much mind to the music. When I was a boy, my mother thought I had a promising voice. So I'd sing for her. And the hogs would come running. Then the neighbors got so they'd come running, too. I got a lot of encouragement to quit singing.
But just because you couldn't sing well, Captain, doesn't mean you don't have an appreciation for music.
Oh, I think it does, Mr. Syberts. You see, I wasn't just obliging my mother. I thought I sounded fine, too.
Well, you were considerably younger, sir. I'm sure you've outgrown all that by now. After all, with your mother to encourage you, you couldn't be blamed for thinking
around
that you had a...
her neck, she wore a yellow ribbon.
Captain.
She wore it in the winter and the merry month of May. And when they ask her why she...
Really, Captain, it was more about the regimental band than anything else, and if you didn't notice the band
far
so
far like... away, far away. She wore it for her lover who was far, far away.
Yes, sir, well, I'm beginning to think I was very mistaken, if you'll excuse
far
me, Captain.
Far away, far away.
Captain Quince?
Major Daggett? What are you doing? I was singing, sir.
You call that singing?
Yes, I do. And I suppose it's a minority opinion.
Are you drunk, Captain?
No, sir. I can account for the singing if you're interested, Major.
I'm only interested in stopping it. We've had enough bad music around here for one day.
I thought dress parade came off fine, sir. I was very proud of B Company.
Captain, I don't want to hear another reference to dress parade today.
Yes, sir.
It's over. That's the only good thing about it. It's over. I don't want to discuss it. I don't want to hear it discussed. That's an order, Captain.
Yes, sir.
I won't even ask if you heard the band.
Did you hear the band?
Must have. I saw it. Seemed to me they marched real good.
No matter if you heard it or not, if that bellowing you call singing's a sample of your ear for music... March real good?
I thought so, sir.
If I want marching, I'll get a company of infantry. From a band, Captain, I expect just one thing, music. You think I'm being unreasonable?
Kind of hard to get music out of busted instruments, I imagine.
I realize some of the pieces are quite old. Schultz tells me in the field they have problems with rust, sand foul in the cornet pistons, but busted instruments?
The report said the band was brawling over something Saturday night. Someone put his foot through a field drum. Some of the blow horns got smashed.
You read a report on a band brawl?
Mm-hmm. On your desk, Sunday morning, Major.
Oh. Well, I want to talk to the bandmaster, and if you'll stop delaying me, I will.
Sorry to hold you up, Major.
Lee. I'm sorry.
For what?
Well, I'm mad as the devil. Didn't mean to take it out on you.
I was handy.
And you were singing, don't forget. And it set me off.
Set Mr. Syberts off, too.
Fact of the matter is, we have guests on the post. I wanted to be especially proud of our band. Oh, and what they did to Boots and Saddles. I think it was Boots and Saddles. I gotta see Schultz.
Tell him I thought the band marched real good. You ailing, Harrison?
Not me, Sergeant.
Well, we'd like to get that lumber loaded so you could run the wagon up to old Bedlam, unload it, and come back here and start all over.
No, I'm doing what I can. I swear I am.
You ain't ailing. You shake a leg.
Both of them shaking now, Sergeant.
All right, Harrison. Come out with it. I got about half a minute's patience left.
You know I'm a reasonable man. You know that right off. Well, if I'm not reasonable, maybe there's a cause.
I ain't got long to wait.
Like this contrary weather. It ought to be cooling off. Give a man a feel for hard work. It's got no right to be blazing hot this time of year.
You're asking for a change of weather?
I'd be obliged if you could arrange it, Sergeant. Anything, just any small thing would be an improvement.
Well, now, you just come to the right man, Harrison. Just for you, I'm going to change the weather. You mind now you ask me to do it?
Oh, I ask. I sure ask, all right.
Trooper Harrison?
Yes, Sergeant.
Report to the guardhouse.
Guardhouse? On what charge?
On the charge that you asked for. It takes you right out of the blazing sun. Of course, how you're going to get a breath of air is something else again. But seeing any small change would be an improvement.
Sergeant, I'll be getting back to my loading now.
I thought you wanted to change the weather.
One day I'm going to learn to keep my mouth shut around here.
That day comes, you write me a letter so I'll know.
You know I can't write.
I tell you one good thing, Harrison.
I just ain't rising to any more bait, Sergeant.
Fatigue's over in half an hour, and after supper...
There's a band concert, I know. Well, it ain't gonna cool me off none. Not a cent's worth.
Only there ain't gonna be no band concert. In fact, if Bandmaster Schultz can't explain himself any better to Major Daggett than he has so far...
Oh, my foot!
Maybe we heard the last toot ever from our regimental band.
Pliny. You around, Pliny?
No.
What are you doing behind the pickle barrel? You drop a penny?
Are you alone, Captain?
Sure.
I'm not exactly open. It's almost 4:30.
You'd open at midnight to sell a two-penny cigar. Now, come on out from behind that barrel.
Well, oh, my, it's unnerving. That's what it is.
What did you want, Captain?
What are you whispering about?
Well, you never know who's listening these days.
I'm listening. I'm hard put to hear you. Are you going to sell me a glass of beer, or do I have to draw it myself?
Ha-ha.
Uh-huh.
Who sent you?
Pliny, it's a hot day.
Oh, no, you don't, sir. I know an investigation when I see one. Well, you may tell that committee and Major Daggett and all the powers that be that I am living up to the letter of my agreement with the United States Army.
Maybe you ought to have a glass of beer, too.
Yeah. It's not my concern if the regimental band can't play without instruments.
What about the band?
No beer, no band. Oh, I'll miss the drums. Won't you?
Pliny, what time of day do you start making sense?
Why, Captain, I believe you don't know. You came here in innocence. But these are dark days, and the seeds of distrust are on the wind.
This time I'm going into the canteen and get that beer.
There is no beer. There will be no beer. Beer is a closed issue. Poor Schultz. Poor Schultz.
You keep going from beer to band.
From no beer to no band. And you can thank Mrs. Feemster and her committee for that.
Mrs. Feemster's not doing anything. She's just visiting Fort Laramie.
Her visit was ill-timed. Just when Schultz needed new instruments the worst way. But alas, 5% of nothing will not buy French horns and trumpets. And, oh, my. I will miss the drums. I'm still not reaching you, am I, Captain?
I know. No, you're not.
Then let me put it simply. A, B, C. A is for the agreement. Now then, 5% of all proceeds from the sale of beer I give to B, which is the band. From these monies, Schultz buys new instruments. That is, he did until... Oh, yes. Until C. C is for committee, headed by Mrs. Feimster, the Committee for Moral Improvement, if you will. Oh, and that means no beer. It follows then, no beer, no proceeds, no band.
Oh, my, I put that well, didn't I?
If you did, you better climb in that pickle barrel, Pliny. A sutler that doesn't sell beer needs a real hiding place.
But the brine...
Salty.
Oh, Captain, I was just about to send for you.
Just came from the settlers, Major. You got any idea what's going on around here?
Hold your voice down. Come here.
Pliny was whispering, too, for a while.
Now listen to me, Lee. I get a better idea than anyone what's going on around here. Mrs. Feimster's in my office now. Let's go in here.
The army run by a woman now, Major?
That's not funny, Lee.
I don't mean it funny. I can't get a glass of beer. Pliny says that woman's why.
I've just learned from Washington that there's several thousand Mrs. Feimsters, Captain, and their ranks seem to be growing daily. Not only that, but there are also Mr. Feimsters, and their voices are getting louder every day.
Mrs. Feimster doesn't like beer?
On moral grounds.
She likes whiskey better?
Whiskey isn't the issue. Beer, light wines, such as are sold at the sutler's canteen.
Then she likes whiskey better.
She wouldn't see it that way. Besides, it isn't just the beer. That's just part of their plan for moral improvement. They want to see that all posts have libraries, more recreational facilities, concerts.
From the regimental band playing on no instruments?
Well, Mrs. Feimster realizes the problem there.
I got nothing against libraries, recreation. We need them. But do you think we got any kind of a drinking problem at Fort Laramie?
I've never been aware of one.
If we had one, you'd be aware of it. We all would. And if we had one, it wouldn't be on account of beer served to the settlers.
I know that, Lee. You act like this was up to me. Let me assure you, it isn't.
Mrs. Feimster, post commander?
I'm still in command here, and that means I still follow orders from Washington. That's where the real pressure's coming from. They've banned the sale of beer at Fort Sully, Fort McPherson, and Fort Totten. And I can't keep them from banning it here.
That brings us back to whiskey again. If a man can't get a glass of beer on the post, he'll go off the post. You think Mrs. Feimster knows what a hog ranch is?
A whiskey ranch? I doubt it.
Well, they got them now, all around Fort Sully and Fort Totten. And men that used to drink beer at those posts are stealing off and rotting their insides on hog ranch whiskey.
You seem pretty sure of your facts, Lee.
Ask Major Trucks. He got the information at the post surgeon's meeting last month at Fort Randall. The post surgeons are recommending that they reopen the canteens.
I wonder. Nah, it'd never work.
What wouldn't work?
I don't think even Major Trucks could convince Mrs. Feimster she was short-sighted.
I was thinking more of letting Mrs. Feimster make her own decision about being short-sighted.
You haven't met her, have you?
No, I'm kind of looking forward to it.
Now, Lee...
I'd like to volunteer to show Mrs. Feimster around the post tomorrow, Major.
Volunteer?
You might just tell her I'll call for her tomorrow, right after guard mount. Afternoon to you, Major. In time, we'd want to build a library building separate, but that takes time. Right now, there's only one building not being put to use.
Well, I'm sure I don't know where that is, Captain. Goodness knows we've covered most of the post.
Except the sutler's, ma'am, is just ahead.
But surely the sutler's store isn't vacant.
Not the store, just the canteen. It's part of the same building.
Is that where they keep beer?
When they had it, ma'am.
My dear young man, I have never set foot in a saloon, and I don't intend to go now.
A saloon's where they sell liquor, ma'am. This canteen's an empty room and a counter. But if you don't want to look at it,
You're certain there's nothing in the nature of spirits in there.
I give you my word, Mrs. Feimster. There isn't a sign of spirit in there now.
Very well, then. I suppose I should take the long view. After all, the library is the important thing. But in a saloon...
A canteen.
I'll take your word there's a difference, Captain.
After you, ma'am.
Thank you, Captain.
Canteen straight ahead, Mrs. Feemster.
Now then, Pliny, I got a long order here. Best you write it down.
Yeah, just a moment, Sergeant. Just a moment. Captain?
Yes, Pliny? Oh, have you met Mrs. Feemster? This is Pliny Burgess, the settler.
Mr. Burgess?
Madam? Now, Captain, you know very well the canteen is... well, it's...
Yeah, we know, Pliny. We come to see how the room would do for a library.
A library... you mean books, and books in there?
We'll just look it over. You mind your customer over there.
Oh, well, I don't know
I got cash money, Pliny.
Coming. Yes, indeed. In fact, I'm here.
Well, Mrs. Feemster?
Well, yes, I think perhaps you may be right, Captain.
Lemon extract.
This room would make...
I want all the lemon extract you got. All the vanilla... Peppermint, ginger,
all?
Every drop. Then I want everything in stock in the way of cinnamon, red pepper sauces, bay rum. You got any smelly water, Pliny?
Smelly? Oh, no, I don't believe I have any. Oh, no, no.
You're not paying much mind to the room, ma'am.
Hey? Oh, why? Oh, yes, it's first rate. Splendid.
O.D. something, Pliny.
O.D.? Smelly.
Excuse me, ma'am. You'd know what I'm trying to say.
I?
You know, you women folks uses it sometimes. Smells right nice. O.D.
O.D. cologne.
Oh, that's it, ma'am. Thank you kindly. I'll take all you got, Pliny.
All, I've got.
Seems to me we could get several hundred books in here, Ms. Feemster. Now, along that wall there,
we just could... a minute, Captain. Young man.
You talking to me, ma'am?
I am indeed. Your order to Mr. Burgess, all the lemon extract, all the cologne.
Yes, ma'am.
May I ask what you're planning to do with it?
Why, drink it, ma'am.
Drink it?
Well, maybe not all of it. I'll sell some, chances are. Maybe give some now and again to my friends, but...
Drink it?
Why, ma'am, you strain extract or that O.D. stuff through some coarse bread, you got a fine batch of alcohol.
Oh, my...
Now, myself, I'd rather have a glass of beer, but we can't get that no more here, so, well, man's left to his own devices, you might say.
Thank you, Gorse.
I just hope it did the trick, Captain.
Right now, we almost have this added up, so let me see what that... That comes to $57.43, Sergeant.
Pliny, I've been thinking this over.
Huh? Oh. Well, now, I'll tell you what I'm going to do. Now, since you're such a good customer, I'm going to let you have the whole thing for $57.33.
You drink it, Pliny. I'm going to Laramie Village for a beer.
Captain, you've come to say goodbye.
No, I wasn't sure I'd be welcome, Mrs. Feemster. Major tells me you were a while settling down.
I very nearly fainted. You may as well know that.
Well, if it'd make you feel any better, it was all made up for your benefit, ma'am.
So Major Daggett assured me. Oh, my, Captain. I'm going back to Washington with a brand new outlook. I think our Committee on Moral Improvement may just revise its thinking a bit.
You talked to the post-surgeon?
Indeed I did. I'm taking the entire matter up with all of official Washington.
Yes, ma'am.
And I want to thank you for opening my eyes, Captain. And that nice orderly of yours.
Harrison?
Yes, Trooper Harrison. He's the one who makes those nice outdoor stoves.
He is?
He was cooking last evening down by the Laramie River. I was out for my evening constitutional, and he explained it all to me about his stove. A retort, a condenser, and a receiver.
Harrison, he
called it a stove?
Oh, he had some other name for it. A foolish name, too.
A foolish name like a still?
Yes, but I could see it was a stove. He's promised to send me the plans, show me just how to make it.
Mrs. Feemster, that stove, now it's just...
Oh, my goodness, the stage is ready. Goodbye, Captain.
Goodbye, Mrs. Feemster.
Fort Laramie is produced and directed by Norman MacDonald and stars Raymond Burr as Lee Quince, Captain of Cavalry, with Vic Perrin as Sergeant Gorse. The script was specially written for Fort Laramie by Kathleen Height, with sound patterns by Bill James and Ray Kemper, musical supervision by Amerigo Marino. Featured in the cast were Howard McNear, Jeanette Nolan, and Sam Edwards. Jack Moyles is Major Daggett, and Harry Bartell is Lieutenant Syberts.
Company, attention! Dismiss!
Next week, another transcribed story of the Northwest frontier.
Very interesting Fort Laramie there. Still Waters. Original air date, the 14th of October, 1956. Actually, Howard McNear starred in there. I just talked about him last week because the president of the Grand Hour Fan Club pointed out that Howard McNear is most noted for playing Floyd on the Andy Griffith Show. Okay, we'll fulfill an FCC obligation here. And then we'll return to the programming.
This is a firearm safety PSA. No matter how you feel about current gun laws, everybody should know the most critical rules about handling any firearm. Rule 0, all guns are always loaded. Rule 1, never point a gun at anything you are not willing to destroy. Rule 2, keep your finger off the trigger until your sights are on target and you have made the decision to shoot. Rule 3, be sure of your target and what is beyond it. A public safety message from WMFO in Medford, Tufts Educational Radio.
Gun safety. WMFO, Medford.
Thank you, Digital George and Digital Henry, for that PSA. Coming up, we'll conclude the show with yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Again, the Red Duke Matter. This is episode 4. This is the serialized daily, starring Bob Bailey. Episode 314, then original air date of the 26th of January, 1956. So here we go. This is Arthur, listening to the Grand Hour here on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Tufts Freeform Radio here in Medford.
Johnny Dollar.
You placed a call to the Universal Adjustment Bureau in Hartford, Connecticut?
Yes, I did.
We have Mr. Pearson on the line now. Go ahead, please.
Thank you. Hello?
Johnny?
Niles. Ben Abbott's rating with Dun & Bradstreet is very good. He doesn't need any money. I still haven't determined if there was really an accident. Oh, and no one seems to know what happened to Thomas Warner.
Who's that?
The trainer who was supposed to be with the horse when Abbott destroyed it. When his father called me from Baltimore, he doesn't know where he is either.
Is that so?
Something just occurred to me, Niles.
What?
Abbott's claim was filed over a week ago, yet he hasn't threatened to sue us or go to the insurance commission.
I know. And that's usually pretty standard procedure with a man like Abbott.
It is. If he has a just claim.
Tonight and every weekday night, Bob Bailey in the transcribed adventures of the man with the action-packed expense account, America's fabulous freelance insurance investigator.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Expense account submitted by Special Investigator Johnny Dollar. Location, San Pietro, California. To the Universal Adjustment Bureau, Universal Building, Hartford, Connecticut. The following is an accounting of expenditures during my investigation of the Duke Red matter. I had a strong suspicion that the death of Duke Red, a racehorse, had not happened as reported. The one man who could possibly answer my questions was missing. He had left the Abbott Ranch in San Pietro without collecting a month's back pay and without telling anybody about his forwarding address.
Just a minute there, sir.
Hi.
Mr. Dollar.
Hello, Kelly.
Mr. Dollar, you can make this pretty hard for me. Mr. Abbott told me I shouldn't let you on the ground.
Well, now, you didn't strike me as the kind of fellow who took that order too seriously.
What do you want, sir?
I want Thomas Warner, wherever he is.
Well, he isn't here.
I know that, Kelly. I want to find out where he is.
Probably went home.
I talked to his father in Baltimore. His father hasn't heard from him.
Oh.
Wouldn't you like to know where he is?
Men come and go, Mr. Dollar. You're friends with them for a little while, and you never hear from them again. I reckon that's the way we have to look at it. Now, maybe you better go now, Mr. Dollar.
Suppose he didn't want to go without saying goodbye. Suppose he didn't have a choice.
What do you mean?
I mean a man doesn't pass up a month's pay just to make a fancy exit.
We can't talk here, sir.
Where did Thomas Warner stay?
He had a room off the stables, his own place.
How about there?
All right, Mr. Dollar. You wait for me, sir.
I walked on down to the stables again and found the little apartment Thomas Warner had used for living quarters. The door was locked and I waited outside, looking over the workout tracks and the acres of rolling green turf that made Abbott Farms. A little while, Cully appeared.
I shouldn't be doing this, Mr. Dollar. Mr. Abbott would skin me alive if he knew I was having any truck with you after that big row you had with him yesterday.
Well, I'm not about to tell, Mr. Abbott, Cully. I appreciate your help.
This is where Mr. Warner stayed all the time he worked for Mr. Abbott.
Uh-huh.
You can see for yourself, it's all cleaned out, not a stitch left.
Yeah. Did you happen to see Warner leave here that night?
Right after the accident, he was gone. Mr. Abbott came up to the house about 9 o'clock. He told us all that Duke Red had been hurt, he had to shoot him, and that he had taken care of the rest.
You mean destroying the carcass?
Yes, sir.
That's a pretty big job for one man.
Well, I believe Dr. Gorey helped him with it, sir. He was with Mr. Abbott.
Oh.
Then Mr. Abbott told us that Mr. Warner was to blame for the accident and that Mr. Warner wasn't with us anymore.
I wonder if any of the others saw him actually leave the premises.
Well, now, we talked about that amongst ourselves. Nobody saw him go, Mr. Dollar. We thought it was kind of funny. Tom was a friendly, quiet sort of man, but he had a lot of friends here.
Mm-hmm.
It kind of disappointed us all, I guess.
Did he have many things in this room?
Clothes, mostly. He was a light traveler, Mr. Dollar. Horse training was just one thing. He worked on ships and in mining camps and lumber mills, I know that much, and he read a lot. Always seemed to be studying, finding himself.
Did he have a temper?
No, sir. No, sir. That's one thing Mr. Tom didn't have. Good horse trainer can't afford to have a temper. Even Mr. Abbott he could handle. All except that night, I guess. Mr. Abbott got powerful mad, I'm sure. Mr. Abbott is not an easy man to work for.
How long have you been with him, Cully?
23 years, sir. We were together in Maryland before he moved the stables to California.
His bad temper hasn't bothered you?
Mr. Abbott was different than he is now. I mean, when Ms. Abbott was alive. But then when she died and raising Miss Terry, he hasn't had it so easy. I mean, easy with himself. You know what I'm trying to say?
Yeah, I think so.
I worry about Mr. Abbott, Mr. Dollar. He don't seem to run himself well sometimes. You know what I mean.
Yeah.
Maybe Duke Red being gone now will help. Mr. Abbott counted on that animal a lot. Counting on a racehorse is not just being anxious overnight or for a week, but being anxious for years, from the time they're colts to when they first step out. Now he don't have that worry at all. Maybe it'll do him some good.
What about his other horses?
Them? Well, none of them like Duke Red. Not the same at all. They'll race and make money, but nothing like Duke Red.
Yeah.
Mr. Warner said he was a fine horse.
Tell me, what kind of a car did Mr. Warner drive?
Well, he didn't have a car, Mr. Dollar.
Well, how do you suppose he left here? He must have been carrying luggage.
I reckon so. He could have lugged him out the highway and flagged himself a ride or waited for the bus. They come by all the time.
Think he might have called a cab in town?
Didn't use the house phone. Maybe the one down in the stable office.
Maybe someone drove him in, Cully.
Miss Terry might have, sir.
Huh?
Miss Terry drove Mr. Warner around now and then.
Did Mr. Rabbit approve of that?
No, sir. He did not.
After my talk with Cully, I took a chance and hung around the stables trying to get a line on Thomas Warner. Ben Abbott's belligerent attitude seemed to permeate the whole farm. The horse handlers I talked with were grumbling and complaining. I was able to learn nothing from them. I decided to tackle Abbott himself again. He wasn't in, but his daughter was.
Well, you came around just the right time, Mr. Dollar. We haven't had too much excitement around here all day long. I think they're supposed to toss you out on your ear when you show up. That should be interesting. Would you like a drink?
No, not right now, thanks.
Not right now, thanks. Now, isn't that the end, the bitter end? So precise, so efficient, so determined, so anxious to do a good job. To be a sober, steady, substantial, expert bore. Now, what is it?
Who are you mad at, Terry? Tom Warner?
Why should I be mad at him? Horse trainer.
Because he left and didn't say goodbye?
Maybe.
You know, when I first came in this house 2 days ago, you were arguing with your father. I couldn't help overhearing it. Was that about Tom Warner?
Yes. Dad said he wasn't good enough for me. I'm all right now.
Something else that day. That business you were telling me about before. It'll have to be looked into.
Why, for heaven's sake?
Because you intimated that your father and Dr. Gorey might be lying about the whole thing. Do you realize that if there's any truth to it, your father'd be liable for criminal charges?
I know. I was just trying to put Dad in a bad light with you. It was just for good old-fashioned first-class spite. Him telling me about not seeing Tom and all. We've been arguing for weeks about it. When I saw you the other day, I thought it was a good chance to get back at Dad.
I see. Tell me about the trouble over Warner.
Why tell you?
Well, let's say I'm an interested party. I like you, Terry.
Well, Tom and I saw quite a bit of each other, and Dad never liked it. I suppose because I'm all he has left. Mother and Bob, he was my older brother, were killed in an airplane accident a few years ago. Dad's always expected me to marry one of the Long Island horsey set, the turf, something, I don't know. Anything but a horse trainer. He's been looking for an excuse to get rid of Tom.
Your father doesn't strike me as the kind of man who'd have to give an excuse to fire someone he didn't want around.
Well, he found an excuse. He blamed the accident on Tom. Do you think he's mad?
What's that?
Nothing.
Do you suppose your father will ever calm down so I can talk to him?
I don't know. The Abbotts have always been a terribly angry group of people, very emotional. There doesn't seem to be much of a let-up these days.
Terry, is that what you meant when you asked me if I thought your father was mad?
I suppose so. It's almost as if he's been on the verge of something lately, something desperate. His moods frighten me sometimes. They didn't used to. I don't easily frighten. But looking back, 2 years ago, Daddy bought a new car. We were out driving one day right after he bought it, and something went wrong. The gear shifter, some little thing. Well, Daddy was so angry, he just backed the car up and smashed it into a cement wall and left it. That was when he first frightened me, the first time that I can remember.
Have you been frightened much?
Since then? Oh, yes, many times. That's why Tom was so nice to have around. He never became angry. Never did things like that. like the men I know. Tom sat quietly, and he let me sit beside him, reading, talking. I'm not that kind, really, of course, but I liked it with Tom. I liked it very much. You asked me about him, Johnny. Well, I'll tell you. If he'd come to say goodbye to me, there would have been no goodbye. I would have gone away with him anywhere. I was in love with him from the first day he came to work here. I still am. I always will be. Well, that's all there is to tell.
Did he know this, Terry?
Yes. And he knew I meant it.
I do.
Hi.
What can I do for you?
Constable in.
I'm in. I'm the constable. Tad Polk.
My name's Johnny Dollar. I'm from Hartford.
Mm-hmm. What's your trouble, Mr. Dollar?
Well, I'm worried, I guess, Mr. Polk. I walked around for a long time before I came in here.
Yeah. Sit down. Yeah, hardly anybody drops in this time of night, unless they're drunk. How about you?
Nope.
No, didn't think so.
Mr. Polk, I'm an insurance investigator. I've been in San Pietro 3 days now, trying to get the facts about a claim filed by Benjamin Abbott.
Mm-hmm. I suppose about his horse, Duke Red.
That's right, Mr. Polk. I can't seem to locate a man named Warner. Thomas Warner. Worked as a trainer for Abbott up until the day of the accident.
Go ahead, sir.
Warner and Abbott had an argument over the accident. Warner left. He was fired. His folks in Baltimore haven't heard from him, and they're worried. I can't seem to get a line on him myself, and I need to talk to him.
Yes, well, what exactly do you want me to do for you, son?
Help me find him.
You sure he's missing?
He isn't around.
You want to make out a missing persons complaint, that it?
I suppose so, yes.
Yes, all right. Now, you just sign here.
All right. There. You guarantee results?
I might surprise you, mister. I'll let you know what happens.
Now, here's our star to tell you about the final intriguing episode of this week's story.
Tomorrow, well, it all hinges on a decent man who knows he's loved and never said goodbye. Join us, won't you? Yours truly, Johnny Dollar.
Yours truly, Johnny Dollar, starring Bob Bailey, is transcribed in Hollywood. Written by John Dawson, it is produced and directed by Jack Johnstone. Be sure to join us tomorrow night, same time and station, for the next exciting episode of Yours truly, Johnny Dollar. Roy Rowan speaking.
Red Matter. Original air date the 26th of January 1956. I don't believe they might say it at the end of episode 5, which I'll play next week. It's kind of going to offset some things because there's only one left in the Red, not the Red Duke, but the Duke Red Matter. I had a doctor named Red Duke years ago. Took my appendix out. That's actually why I decided to play the Duke Red Matter. It's neither here nor there. I'll finish up that series next week. Come back with another Western. Just want to say thanks for listening. This is MacArthur here on the Grand Hour on 91.5 FM and or WMFO.org, Medford Tufts Free Form Radio. Matt should be in at 8. I haven't seen anything to indicate he won't be in with the whirlpool after that. I don't know.